Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our meeting this morning. It is February 26th, and I will call the Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development Finance Policy meeting to order. So thank you again for being here. We have a couple of bills on the agenda today, which we'll be hearing later on. We've got some exciting presentations we're going to hear about. Today's about youth leadership and youth education when it comes to workforce. So we're excited to have some of our folks with us today. One thing I want to just set up ahead of time, at least I think my co-chair would agree to this too, because of the security changes that we had this year, we probably need to try to wrap our meetings up around 5 to 10 at any time possible to give the officers time to clear the room. So we can't do what we did last year and just kind of hang out. We've got to try to help and move things along. So my goal will be going forward, and maybe my co-chair would agree, that if we can wrap up a couple minutes early and not run it like I've done it long too. I've been a couple minutes long. So I just wanted to just say that out there, that we want to do our best to make sure the next committee has the time to prepare and get ready for that. So with that, we should be no problem getting to that today. We don't have, I don't think, a very really packed agenda, so this will be great. With our agenda in front of us, the first thing we're going to do, besides calling the meeting to order, is look at our minutes from February 25th. Vice Chair Mecklen, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, and I move the minutes.
There's a motion to move the minutes from yesterday, February 25th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Those minutes are carried. Thank you so much. Our first presenter up today, members are from Josiah Littant. Again, I got it. Littant. Thank you. That's it, Littant. From the Minnesota P20 Education, would you please come forward, Josiah, and get yourself settled in. Members, you've got the packet in your packet today, their packet, their report, and we're looking forward to hearing this today. So, Mr. Littant, if you are ready, introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I want to make sure you can see my slides. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, good morning. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. Josiah Littant, Executive Director of the Minnesota P20 Education Partnership. With your permission, I'll dive into my presentation this morning. Really appreciate the committee's focus today on youth and learners in Minnesota. I'm excited to be here to highlight our annual report, which you should have a copy of, and to share about the work of the Minnesota P20 Education Partnership. We focus on education from birth through higher ed and into workforce development. So particularly excited to be before the House Workforce Committee today to talk about our work. I want to start today by talking about the challenge that you all face here in the legislature. So our workforce and education system is organized legislatively into committees and into education ecosystem by age and into schools, colleges, post-secondary training. But the opportunities and the challenges we face span the learner lifespan, right? They don't exist just in one committee or one organizational structure, even though policy often does. So you're being asked to solve cross-sector problems with your colleagues in other committees with siloed tools. This is one reason why the P20 Education Partnership exists, is that we think about what we call the entirety of the learner lifespan, from the moment someone is born through their experience in K-12, into post-secondary education and training, and into workforce development throughout the rest of their lives. We're trying to work past fragmentation that is creating inefficiencies in our system and inequities. You'll see here at the bottom of my slide our education to employment pathway. And as we think about the engagement of our learners throughout their life in education, we are attempting to focus on solutions that work at the seams of education, putting the whole learner at the center of the work that we do, and looking at policy solutions that address the entirety of their experience. So I want to talk a little bit, before I highlight some of our accomplishments in the past year, about what the P20 partnership brings to policymakers. We're really focused on cross-sector insights. Our partnership includes 28 member organizations, institutions, state agencies. You can see their logos here on the screen, as well as legislators. The P20 has bicameral and bipartisan representation. In fact, Representative Mueller is one of our members. Good to see you today. And so we are an independent body that was created by the legislature to focus on policy solutions for our state and to raise priority issues in education and workforce development and figure out strategies at the, we call it the capital P policy level that we bring to all of you, but also in terms of local policy practice and innovation that we can drive together with our partners. So our focus at the P20 partnership is on innovation, change, and advocacy for policies and priorities that will affect outcomes for our learners. Our North Star at the P20 partnership is increasing social and economic mobility for each and every Minnesotan through education. We were codified in 2009 by the legislature. We were created to issue policy recommendations to the legislature, to the governor's office, and to state agencies to strengthen those outcomes for our learners. You'll see here in our diagram on this slide how we work to surface cross-sector insights through the work of our coalition and our members and the many other stakeholders who are in education and aligned with education throughout the state. So the P20 partnership is uniquely positioned to strengthen that collaboration and facilitate that collaboration in an ongoing, structured way with support from staff. I began in this role as executive director 3 years ago. So the partnership has existed for 17 years, the first 14 as a coalition, and the last three now with myself and a deputy director to ensure continuity, consistency, and forward movement in this work. We think of ourselves as a hub to keep the members connected and raise conversations that are happening across sector. We are a public-private partnership, so we also include Minnesota's public schools and private schools, public colleges and universities, private colleges and universities, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Business Partnership, also our members. So we are uniquely positioned to help prepare our learners ultimately to move effectively from education to employment and to continue to engage with education throughout their lives. So one of the projects we've been working on this past year that we'll be excited to share out a little bit later here in 2026 is that we're beginning to track early indicators and identify the impact of our work with quantitative and qualitative measures. It can be challenging to identify how this coalition work that we're doing is driving change and improving outcomes for our learners. So we will be tracking early and mid-range indicators that specifically signal system alignment and indicate how we are driving change to help learners reach those long-term goals, like access, like attainment, like workforce readiness, as we think about that whole systems approach. So again, we're really good at having lots of data in Minnesota. We want to be focused on what data matters for the P20's work. Again, particularly looking at those transitions, right? So as we think about pre-K to kindergarten, as we think about elementary to middle and high school to college or post-secondary training, et cetera. So we will be raising those several levels of those metrics to show the impact of our work in the coming year. There are other examples of the evidence of our momentum that I'd like to share with you. The annual report goes into much more detail than I will today in this brief presentation. There's a number of bullet points on the screen. I'm going to share three with you that I think will be particularly interesting to this committee. Part of why I'm also excited to be here is that the P20 in this moment is lifting up our work, ensuring that we're looking across the whole spectrum. And to be perfectly frank, early childhood and workforce are two areas that we have not focused on as strongly historically. It is critical to us that if we are going to do this P20 work, P20 standing for early childhood, pre-K, through graduate school and or workforce development, that we need to be focused on the entirety of the spectrum. So a few examples I'd like to highlight. Under emerging policy work. So one thing you might be thinking is, well, this is all really interesting, Josiah. I don't recall the P20 partnership bringing us a recommendation for policy. And that's true. In the last several years, as the partnership has been sort of rebuilding, we've been working towards what is our process for bringing legislative recommendations forward. So we have several areas of emerging policy work that will result in legislative recommendations in 2027. I want to highlight the first bullet here. We are focusing on our educator workforce across early childhood and K-12 and with our higher ed partners. We know we need to strengthen the recruitment and retention of teachers and professionals and administrators across our system. This past year, we were excited to launch a joint committee with the Governor's Workforce Development Board to focus on the educator workforce and bringing forward recommendations to the legislature for strengthening recruitment and retention of our educators. That committee is well underway. It includes members from both the GWDB and the P20 partnership, as well as members of the governor's interagency workforce alignment task force. We are working to look, again, as I mentioned, across that continuum of the educator experience. So yes, at the recruitment phase, but also those first 5 years on the job and long term. How are we supporting our educators in the classroom to strengthen educator workforce? We're excited to bring you those recommendations. The first set of those will be released by the early fall. So we're excited to have that conversation with you next year. Statewide alignment is another area that we're looking at. Where can the P20 help add capacity or amplify promising practices and bring partners to the table, given our unique role in this space? Right now, one of the areas I want to highlight for this committee we're focused on is career-connected learning. So we know that this is essential, right? That we are focusing education on outcomes and what it is helping lead our learners to in terms of jobs and career and in terms of life, good civic participation, citizenship, et cetera. Before I was in this role, I had the privilege of being a vice president of strategic initiatives at one of our state's great community technical colleges, Minnesota State College Southeast in Red Wing and Winona. In that work, I worked closely with our local businesses and industry, and we know how valuable those relationships are, that partnership between higher education and our business and industry partners. But we also know that that work with our students needs to begin well before post-secondary, right? It begins, frankly, in early childhood and in K-12. And so one of the pieces that P20 has been looking at, along with some of our partners from the Greater Twin Cities United Way's Career Academies, as well as our partners at the Education Policy Coalition, is what does career-connected learning look like? I know you'll be hearing several other presentations on this very topic today. Where can we help amplify promising practices? Where can we add capacity? Where is there need in the state to centralize resources and help support good work while ensuring that that work is able to happen very much at the local level with local flexibility, nuance, and implementation? So we're very excited about work we are leading with that group, really our first priority being to gather input from the experts across our state who are working in this field, be they teachers and administrators, business leaders, students, right? So raising up those voices to identify where we can help move that work forward. Finally, under leverage and efficiency, a lot of great highlights from this past year, but I want to highlight the last bullet most importantly, which is our strategic planning. Now, I know strategic planning is not the most exciting thing to hear about, but here's why it's important. As I mentioned, this coalition has existed for 17 years, but in the last 3 to 6 years, we've really been building what the P20 partnership can be. In order to do that effectively, we have to have a clear strategy. The P20 partnership has done some great work over its almost 2 decades, but it has not been a strategic approach that is looking across that P20 spectrum, in particular, not just looking at individual efforts within each sector, but how they influence and lead one to the next to really strengthen that work that we're doing at the seams of education. We have been working since the fall on developing our first strategic plan. It will be completed and publicly released by the end of the summer, and we're excited to share that with all of you to really be clear about what our strategy over the next 5 years is and what we see our unique value proposition being and how we can be an asset to the legislature and in the education community across the state. So finally, what I'd like to end on today, and I'm happy to take any questions, is that we believe that our cross-sector lens matters and can be an asset for all of you in your work. There are few entities like us in the state and even in the country that are looking at a high policy level with senior leaders from organizations, agencies, and the legislature at the table that are looking across all ages, systems, public and private, schools and institutions all at once. So we really see ourselves as an asset to help identify where policy choices interact across silos and where we can make the most impact collectively. We have the capacity for P20 as we continue to grow. We believe to be a tremendous tool to all of you and to our educational leaders across the state. We're excited to continue to tell you about our growth, about our priorities, and to hear from you how we can be an asset in the education to workforce space. So please consider us a resource as your work goes forward. Feel free to reach out now or at any point in the future. And I'm certainly happy now or later to take any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Letant. I really appreciate that. And again, welcome to our committee. I've been on this committee for many years, and this P20 is new to me. So I think it's delayed, of course, that you should have been here earlier, and I'm glad you are. I think this is important. I think what I have just only a comment on early, and I'll look it up for other member questions. But what we see here is a lot of employees looking for work that really don't know what the next step is. I think that I've been seeing personally, our high schools have not been preparing our students for the workforce like I thought they would be. It could be some very basic things like the resumes. It's the soft skills on doing interviews. Are there interns available, internships around? So I think that you're hitting on something that's really critical, that we're seeing a lot of requests for dollars through workforce development, nonprofits that want to help people get stood up, and we all want that. But I guess have expectations that that should be happening in the high school level more than it is. So I think your helping and working through us now would be a good collaborative thing. So I was thinking here, you know, everybody's got an app on their phone for something. And again, I wish we got almost the high schools would say, here, Johnny or Susie, here's an app. If you want to do an interview, what's a resume look like? And you just tap it. And it's really meant for that group. And maybe there's a video about what an interview looks like. Maybe it's other local internships around my area. And if I plug in my zip code, that something might come up. I don't know what that looks like. But there are things where I think young people, when they get to this point, there's a lot of new Americans that just come to, at least my community, they're first-time Americans, 10th graders, 9th graders, 8th graders, and they have to get through school in an accelerated way, but they won't have that same opportunity, but they might need something like that. I just know that there's a lot of work to do in this area to have our kids better ready for the workforce. So thank you again for being here. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, Mr.
Any member questions for the testifier today? And Rep. Mueller, thank you for serving on their board and their help on that, too. So with that, looks like you're set to go. Thank you very much for your testimony
today. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. All right. Next up on our agenda, folks, is Discover Your Future presentations. I'd like to call forward all three testifiers today that are going to be speaking to this. That would be Ms. Johnson, Ms. Noel, and Ms. Engels. If you guys could all come forward and get settled in. Not sure who's going to sort of run point, but I think Ms. Johnson's going to start it out, I think, right? Or whatever. Okay. Go ahead and introduce yourself when you're ready. We'll let you get your PowerPoint up and running. Again, welcome to the committee and proceed when you're ready.
Apologies for the delay. Chair Baker, Chair Pinto, members of the committee, thank you so much for allowing us to present Discover Your Future today. My name is Christine Noel. I am Director of Government Affairs for ECMC Group, and I'm just going to take a minute to give you an overview of who ECMC Group is. We are a nonprofit corporation based in Minneapolis. We were originally created by the U.S. Department of Education in a public-private partnership to help the department manage their federal financial aid portfolio. Right now in the state of Minnesota and across the nation, we provide students and families and organizations with free resources. I might add that we have a partnership with the Minnesota Department of Education to help them with their FAFSA outreach to students and families, and we provide that service free of charge.
Ms. Noel, I'm sorry, yes. Would you pull that microphone in a little closer to you? Sure. It's hard to hear, and then the other testifiers, you've got to kind of get close to the mic. Thank you.
Absolutely. My theater voice is not projecting. I would also just say that ECMC provides technical assistance, financial literacy, education, and mentorship to students and families who are looking to figure out how to pay for college and how to select a college. ECMC Foundation is a national foundation that focuses on post-secondary completion. They focus on areas like basic needs, making sure that they're removing obstacles, anything that can get in the way of completion, including a flat tire, unexpected expenses, building capacity within institutions to make sure students have a streamlined experience. We've invested about $32 million in the state of Minnesota. P20 is a recent recipient, and we are very proud of that work. Also, Education Impact Fund is another line of our businesses where we invest in very early stage startups that are looking to solve big problems in the education and workforce space. So that's just a quick overview of ECMC Group, and I'll turn it over to my colleague, Heidi Johnson, who's going to walk you through the Discover Your Future initiative.
Good morning, Chair Baker, Chair Pinto, and members of the committee. Can you hear me okay? As Christine said, my name is Heidi Johnson, and I'm the Chief of Staff for ECMC Group. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about Discover Your Future. Chair Baker, based on some of your comments, I think you're going to like what you hear, what our framework is about. I think what's also helpful before I just jump in and start talking about the framework is why ECMC cares about this and what the context is of how we started this work. 3 years ago, our CEO, Dan Fisher, wanted to engage more deeply in Minnesota. And he asked us to create a strategy where we would identify an area that had a need in Minnesota that aligned with our mission and was backed by data. So rather than be an organization that just comes in and hands out money to the loudest voice, we went on a listening tour, and we interviewed folks from across the education and workforce ecosystem, and we learned a few things. First is we have lots of talent sitting on the sidelines that could participate more fully in the economy if they knew about the phenomenal careers that exist, how it could change their mindset, going from just looking for a job to really moving into a career. There is a fundamental gap between the talent that is needed to fill these amazing jobs that Minnesota has and the talent that's available. Young adults need exposure to the careers that are available. They need to understand the skills that are needed for these careers and the pathways they need to take to move them from just an opportunity to fulfilling that career. And we need to address basic needs. Things like transportation, daycare, and current work responsibilities get in the way of taking that first step moving towards a career. We also learned that there are very few programs that are designed with input from young people. Most of these programs are designed by people who have gone to school 20, 30 years ago, and the world is a very different place. We also learned that employers are looking for talent, and based on the data we see, there is opportunity for employers to lean in more meaningful ways to help develop the talent that they need. And finally, there is a large disparity between career exploration programs across our state, which has a direct impact on the young adults that live here. So we hired almost 40 young adults and asked a very simple design question. What's working about the education workforce ecosystem? What's not? And how does it make you feel when you're in it? We also were fortunate enough that we had over 40 professional advisors volunteer across business, through education, and nonprofits who wanted to help and take the young adults' ideas and turn them into programs that can be actionable. So what we envision, I'm gonna go to the next slide, is an ecosystem centered around young adults, giving them the support they need to move from talent full of potential to our future workforce. This means our education and workforce partners working more closely together and not in silos. It means creating data systems to measure which departments or partners are fulfilling what role and what outcomes we are seeing. This means working with stakeholders across the state to create a centralized system that works for all, that can be scaled and cost effective. So over this years-long journey, we co-created two concepts, and these were designed and developed by young adults. The first one is CoLab, which I'm not going to go in deep in today, but just give a short overview. CoLab tackles similar issues that Discover Your Future does, but tries to reach disengaged young adults who are no longer in high school. It uses a physical space where they can explore careers, build skills, and get basic needs support. What the young adults told us that they need from a basic needs perspective is mental health resources, financial well-being, and physical health. Nonprofit partners are also present, so young adults don't have to navigate that ecosystem that I just showed you. The ecosystem comes to them and gives them the support they need. And we pay the young adults who participate to ensure they can maintain that 12-week commitment that this program represents while continuing to meet their life and family obligations. Based on the results that we saw of our three cohorts, we're excited to say that we are going to partner with Wilder and St. Paul Promise Neighborhood to scale this program statewide over the next 3 years. And I think Christine is going to send the impact report later. The second concept and why we're really here today is to talk about Discover Your Future. Today in Minnesota high schools, there are students who receive robust career exploration experiences that start as early as elementary school. Unfortunately, that is not the experience of every Minnesota student. We've heard from young people and secondary school professionals that in some districts, career navigation experience consists of one conversation junior year of high school. What our students need, what our employers need, and what our state needs is consistent, scalable, measurable ways to prepare high school students for career in the future. We need to build consistent processes to ensure we're building the workforce that Minnesota needs. DYF is a comprehensive and consistent statewide career exploration framework that improves student outcomes in high school and beyond. It builds the future economy of Minnesota and engages local communities' strengths to build their future workforce. At its simplest, DYF is broken into three components. A consistent framework that is scalable and flexible to meet individual district and students' needs, outlining categories of activities that high school students participate in to expand their career exploration, culminating in a career pathway decision that includes the educational steps post high school that are needed to thrive in that career. Second is it's a data system to track activities so we can identify longitudinally what works and what doesn't. And third is creating meaningful, scalable, and impactful partnerships between employers, schools, and students. Given today's competitive pressures, employers are essential in shaping the educational pathway. What we heard from young adults and from our post-secondary education partners, our secondary education partners, that made us lean into this work is first that young people across the board want a future where they can work in a career that they love and build a future for themselves and their families. Second, and family influence matters. We heard stories from young people where they've had productive discussions with guidance counselors about a career, let's say, in engineering. And then they go home and they talk about it with their family. And they've heard things like, you can't be an engineer. I don't even know what an engineer does. There aren't any engineers in our community. And worse yet, people like us don't have jobs like that. The family needs to be part of the career exploration conversation so that they understand the potential opportunities ahead for their kids. The third thing we learned is it's a state requirement that every student starting in ninth grade has a personal learning plan, or a PLP, which is defined as programming and career exploration, course scheduling, and experiential learning. So we have a foundation here in Minnesota. Well-funded districts that prioritize career pathway planning can do so, and we've seen examples where it spans K through 12. Less resource districts may not be able to accommodate more than one session with a guidance counselor, let alone programming for all 4 years of high school. As students move from district to district, their POP doesn't necessarily go with them because there's no standard framework or system of data to create a seamless transfer. The student's POP can be interrupted, changed, or lost. Data is important. Currently, we don't have a system that can tell us which education and career pathway planning programs are moving the needle on key metrics that the state needs, like graduation, post-secondary education enrollment and completion, and if career pathway programming leads students to in-demand jobs in our state, and then consequently those students stay in our state and grow their families and their careers, helping Minnesota's economy. And to put a finer point on it, we use some data. In 2022, over 27,000 young people, 16 to 24, were disconnected. They weren't in school and they weren't working. And that's in the Twin Cities alone. That's our future workforce sitting on the sidelines and looking at data statewide. That costs Minnesota taxpayers $350 million a year. And a lot of that is because they didn't have that career planning pathway in high school. So after we received input from young adults and professional advisory committee, we asked Harris Poll to develop a statewide and a national survey to gain more statistically significant sample of what young adults and employers felt about these issues. A few of the key stats is that only about 4 in 10 employers say that young adults are prepared for entry-level jobs. Only 71% of employers say that reliability stands out as the biggest soft skill gap and the most urgent need to fix. 93% of employers agree that basic work-based learning helps organizations identify long-term talent. 93% of employers agree that involving students in real workplaces is key to empowering the workforce. However, many employers face key barriers, which include lack of student awareness of the program, limited staff capacity to support these programs, and coordination with schools and the cost of providing this. 94% of students say that career readiness programs are important for high school students to have a direction before they start to incur debt in post-secondary education. And finally, 92% of employers said that they need to do a better job helping high school students understand career options before they enter post-secondary education and the workforce. As part of our research, we also identified several states with compelling pathway programs leading to robust outcomes for students. Those states include Colorado, Georgia, Texas, Alabama, and Washington. And we incorporated some of their best practices into the DOIF framework. Learning from those states, they're focused on a few different things. They have clear partnerships between employers, school districts, and families. This is a comprehensive, repeatable approach that can be replicated across districts and across employers. They have hands-on experiences so that students can try before they buy a career. This means not wasting time and money on a career that isn't a great fit. They have clear input on curricula from employers so that students leave educational institutions job ready. They have intermediaries and non-school counselors that provide career exploration opportunities and have their school counselors focused on critical things like mental health and basic needs support. They have data systems to track activities and experiences that tie back to specific workforce and economic outcomes that they are driving towards. They have consistent CTE and dual enrollment and apprenticeships. And finally, they have consistent statewide models that are scaled. So now that I've told you the research that went into this Discover Your Future framework, I'm going to dive into the weeds a bit and show you what the framework is. You see that on this framework, there are phases, not activities based on what grade the student is in. We designed this framework this way because life is not linear, and career exploration should be flexible enough to accommodate that. Young people deserve the opportunity to explore pathways and then change their mind and explore other pathways. The goal of this work is to create high-quality employer-connected career experiences. The framework is designed to be personal for each student with a recommended menu of activities. But what is constant is the type of activities that are taking place during each phase of the journey, because each phase builds on one another. And as you can see by this chart, this amount of time they spend on different activities changes and grows phase over phase. The first phase you see is exploration. That's time spent on self-exploration, finding out what they like to do, what they're good at, and what the world needs. This is a step that is critical with setting a firm foundation to build upon. And Chair Baker, there are absolutely apps and AI tools that can help augment this effort. The second phase is exposure. The students experience specific careers. They go deeper in specific career areas. This may mean observing a day in the life of a career, having someone come in and talk about the career and their journey they took to move into that space. It's also time spent exploring what steps after high school are needed to move into these careers. Our belief is that most careers need some sort of post-secondary education, not necessarily a 4-year degree, but some credential of value at a minimum. The third phase is experience. This is the hands-on phase. Students gain real-world experience of their career of choice before any important decision is made post-high school. They also gain a better understanding of that post-secondary pathway that's needed and potentially take initial classes. And finally, elevate. You see, during this phase, most of the time is spent moving towards a chosen career path. It could be taking a dual enrollment course, earning your certificate at a community college, or taking an internship with an employer. This is the time where they elevate their choice and move into real action. So the slide we're on, the previous slide, I think you all have the paper, is a bit of an eye chart, but it's the heart of DYF. Through this framework, we outline standards for each student and provide recommended activities that build to meet these outcomes. This is a list of activities that can be dynamic, and ideally there is a statewide database is created extending on SLEDs, so best practices can be shared across districts, and we can gain insight into which pathway planning activities are instrumental for long-term success. The framework provides consistency while giving districts the ability to make it their own. The key to these activities is engaging employers consistently across the phases. Employers have told us that they can engage more fully with high schools if they can create one solution, the approach that works across districts. It can be scheduled consistently and planned rather than customizing engagement district by district, and worst case, even teacher by teacher. So what does success look like? Students and their support systems consistently experience a wealth of resources. You can go to the next slide. A wealth of resources the state has to offer through local and regional partners. And consistency is the word that I'm going to stress there. Second is schools get access to necessary resources to implement the PLPs in a way that maximizes flexibility while ensuring every student has access to meaningful pathway planning. And finally, employers gain connections to their communities and build the workforce of the future. These outcomes have clear and meaningful return on investment. Research shows that students who focus at least a sixth of their high school credits on career pathway experience 8% higher wages 7 years after graduation. Students who participate in career pathways are 14% more likely to work in the region where they attended high school. It's estimated that there is a $9.4 billion economic contribution from students who graduate from Minnesota public colleges and universities who live and work in the state after high school. Students who participate in career education during high school have a graduation rate of 95%, which is 12% over the current state average. And finally, research shows that for every dollar spent on career planning and youth training in Minnesota, there is a $12.70 return. We feel like that's a pretty good return on investment. By removing barriers and strengthening coordination among education, workforce, and post-secondary education systems, we can grow our economy one young adult at a time. Now, you may be thinking, this sounds great on paper, but how does it actually work? And we thought the same thing. So we wanted to partner, we looked for a partner who could help us pilot the DYF framework. Members of the Minneapolis Public Schools and Achieve Twin Cities were already on our advisory committee and provided input into the design of DYF, and they were a natural partner. So I'm going to turn it over to Kendra, who will now provide an overview of our DYF pilot.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Baker, Chair Pinto, and other members of the committee. Can you hear me okay as well? Trying to lean in.
A little bit up would be good, yeah, thanks.
Okay. My name is Kendra Engels. I'm the Vice President of Program for Achieve Twin Cities. We provide career and college readiness programming across Minneapolis and St. Paul Public Schools. Thank you for your time today to be able to talk about our work with Discover Your Future. So we at Achieve believe that all young people deserve full and equitable access to post-secondary education and career opportunities. And we know that in order for that to happen, young people need regular, ongoing, and personalized career exploration and future planning support throughout their time in high school. We also know that partnerships like ours are critical to ensuring that school districts have the capacity they need to be able to implement this kind of programming. Achieve Twin Cities offers comprehensive career and college readiness services through physical centers that are embedded in over 24 schools across the Twin Cities, and which serve as the hub of future readiness activities for their schools. We also collaborate with the City of Minneapolis to deliver the Step Up Pro internship program during the summer each year. So our approach centers on three interconnected strategies. First, we offer comprehensive post-secondary planning support. Through our school-based centers, we provide support for a wide array of post-secondary plans. With expert personal advising, we help students align their interests and skills with potential career paths, then explore their options, and ultimately select and pursue a future path that aligns with their goals. We also coordinate a wide variety of career exploration events and experiences, from career panels and job shadows to paid internships, which allow young people to explore future pathways and gain real-world skills that will help them get there. And finally, Achieve recruits a robust network of employers and volunteers from the local community and prepares them to provide high-quality career experiences for youth. We aim to build an engaged local employer community who are active and invested in nurturing the next generation of talent in the Twin Cities. Through these three strategies, we provide seamless support for young people throughout their time in high school, from the early career exploration to the hands-on experiences to the post-secondary planning and ultimately the transition out of high school. So because Achieve is a universal service provider across the Twin Cities, our impact is far-reaching. We work with over 15,000 students each year, and 8,500 directly participate in our events and programming. Across the Twin Cities, 93% of seniors are engaging with Achieve programming. With our support, student confidence in future planning rises 21 percentage points from the beginning of senior year to the end of senior year. 93% of our seniors graduate with a documented plan for their future. Lower income students and students of color who work with Achieve enroll in college at 50% higher rates than their peers who do not. FAFSA completion reaches 60% in Minneapolis and St. Paul, which compares to around 47% statewide. And since 2021, we've seen the number of students selecting high-quality non-college pathways nearly double, and that's due to intentional focus and work to ensure that students are aware of and able to access opportunities like apprenticeships and certifications and other high-quality work experiences. So as you've heard, our work aligns very well with the Discover Your Future framework. And as our district partners are also continuing to work to align their future readiness programming through career and technical education, counseling services, and work-based learning, we decided this year to pilot more collaborative efforts alongside our district partners to align better with the Discover Your Future framework. Together, we are seeking to align and integrate our career exploration experience efforts across the district. We're aiming to build systems and infrastructure that allow Achieve to be able to centrally support district employer engagement and the needs that they have for our colleagues in work-based learning and CTE. And we're working to create higher quality and more consistent career experiences that can be expected by all students across their time in high school. Discover Your Future through partnership with Achieve helps to bring coherence and capacity to these efforts by ensuring that there's a through line from 9th to 12th grade and by bringing the capacity and networks needed to be able to scale employer engagement across the district. So this work is still underway, but early learnings demonstrate some clear opportunities for the future. First, earlier and more consistent career exposure is critical, especially in 9th and 10th grade, so that students can be making informed choices about what they do later in high school and beyond. Second, there's a real need for stronger employer engagement. We need employers who are willing to create and support real work opportunities for young people, including internships and work-based learning, and particularly in high-demand fields. We also see opportunity for better integration of district career offerings with those provided by outside organizations like Achieve, both to ensure that students are experiencing seamless support throughout their time in high school and that the adults who are supporting them understand the different opportunities that they're accessing. And finally, there's a need for increased resources and accountability that would support districts who are pulled in so many directions every day to prioritize and sustain robust career and college readiness efforts across the district. I want to thank the committee for your leadership in youth workforce development and for recognizing how important it is to have these sorts of coordinated efforts across both youth and employers. And we believe with continued efforts like these, we can ensure that every young person is ready for their future and that employers in the state have access to the talent that they need. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for the testifying. It's a deep dive. This is a lot of research has gone into this. Thank you very much for this very solid update about getting the kids really thinking about this a little early on and working with the schools and then really engaging the employers to have employers reach out. I think what I can say as an employer myself is I'd love to have a toolbox to help me be a better mentor than to those, maybe some of those students in a field like I'm in. My mind would happen to be hospitality and sort of that line of thing. But again, I mean, this is a very good information. Any questions from members for our testifiers today? I'm going to throw this out there just because I go, this again, great presentation. We heard yesterday from the state demographer, we lose a lot of our kids right out of high school to other colleges. Do you have any sort of sense of, with all your research, and why do you think we lose so many of them? And again, we weren't able to kind of compare our data to other states. I know you want to spread your wings and, you know, maybe it's too expensive here. I don't know what it is, but are you sensing or have any idea for us to try to help in trying to find ways of keeping more of our students here longer after they graduate from high school? Is there any comments to that? And if you do, just chime in. I'm not looking for anything specific, but
I don't think this is statistically valid, but from my perspective, we aren't engaging high school students and creating that stickiness with employers and post-secondary education. So if we establish that relationship where they are working with local employers on what this career path looks like, they're working with local post-secondary education providers, they're doing dual enrollment earlier, they're experiencing what our career technical community colleges look like, they're getting hands-on experience, they're gonna know that they can get their future here and that there's a really strong future here. If it's just left to who has the best rock climbing wall at whatever four-year institution, that's where they're going to go. So we have to build the case that there is a strong future here in Minnesota, and the best way to do that is to stay in Minnesota, get your education, have your internships with these local employers that you've been working with since high school. It's really brand loyalty. We need to think about our high school students as the customer, engage the voice of the customer and treat it like a business, and how do we keep our customer engaged throughout the entire life cycle?
Spot on, Ms. Johnson. Thank you. That was a good comment. Anybody else want to comment to that? So that's great. Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I wanted to ask a question. I know that when I listen to this, it sounds like it's the 9th, 10th grade focus. I'm wondering if you've thought about starting this sooner, because I know there's some states that are doing really tracking students at middle school, because when they go to high school, they're already picking out their course. I mean, it's done. It's almost like they're supposed to register, you know, whether they're going into the career technical education or they're going the four-year or whatever their plan is. And when I was meeting with students this week that are in leadership capacities, they asked that question. Like, we're not starting soon enough. We don't have a chance to see careers or see, you know, what it takes to get your CDL license, what it takes to be a welder, what it takes to, if you want to be a flight attendant, you want to be a nursing home. They don't know the path. And they you only know your dad's a teacher, your mom's a nurse, you know what you are around. But they said it would be so nice if you had exposure in middle school and elementary school to see things, because I think they made a very valid point. So I was curious, because I know some states are really tracking it the kids are making decisions in middle school so that when they get to high school, they're already focused so that when they graduate from high school, they have certificates for welding. They have launched their career, whatever it's going to be. And I think we need to be moving more. So I'm curious on your thoughts on that and your plan for moving it down into experiences in elementary, exposure to things, are especially these essential jobs we need in Minnesota. Thank you.
Who wants to take that, Ms. Johnson?
We completely agree, but we needed to start somewhere. And so we started with high school because we could build, and there was already the momentum with the PLP being a mandate and so a framework to start from. And so starting in high school, but we absolutely agree that this is a framework that can move younger, but it can also move older for displaced workers or disengaged who, you know, didn't graduate from high school. So we feel like this model, we built it from a flexibility perspective, so it can go younger. The activities might be different, and it can go older. We also partner with an organization called Brightbound, which used to be American Student Association out of Boston, similarly situated organization like us, and they are primarily focused on middle school. And so, again, what we're trying to do is build a network of an ecosystem so that one organization doesn't feel like they have to do it all. Really, the key that we're learning is we need to get out of our silos and work together to try to address this issue, but completely agree. And there are some districts here in Minnesota that are starting in kindergarten as well. But there are definitely states that are well ahead of us. Texas is a great example of where they've really tapped in, but that was based on state legislature.
Yeah. Thank you. Representative Wayne Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Thank you for the presentation. One of the things that...
Representative Johnson, just pull that mic in a little bit for us. Thanks.
Usually I can speak. Everybody can hear me. You know, hearing about this and kind of experiencing it as an employer, kind of seeing fewer and fewer youth actually applying for jobs, it seems like a lot of it goes back to the advent and the success of social media and influencers. The example I just brought, I just looked up in 2023, ZEA survey said 61% of U.S. internet users age 18 to 29 said they would quit their jobs to become full-time social media influencers if they could. Now, the thing is where I bring it in is from age 14, they're getting how fun it would be to be an influencer, to do videos, to do all this stuff and the success and the get advertisers and all that stuff. How do you compete with that when they're seeing they could have a career and just having fun as opposed to actually studying and doing these jobs or at a desk and all that stuff? And I'm just curious how many people it pulls out from even trying to do this, why they try to do that. And that's kind of where I think a lot of your struggle is how do you compete with fun?
Ms. Johnson, you want to take that?
I think we need to make work fun, right? We actually, ECMC Group had a campaign called Question the Quo, and we hired influencers to highlight jobs and the impact that those jobs had on the individual, how much fun they had with that job, and the impact they're having on their community. What we heard from young people is they do want to better their community. They want to have better lives, but they want to do something they enjoy. So we need to introduce to them and that connection of what they like to do, what's fun for them, and how that connects to a job. We also need to give some statistics, and that's part of this exploration, of the hard facts of starting your own business, of being an influencer, right? I think every kid or every parent who has a little kid in sports dreams of them being a professional sports player, but that isn't the reality. And so we give some of our kids those stats of, like, you know, how many kids get a college scholarship, how many kids are in the professionals, right? And that they have to have a backup plan or they have to have a primary plan. We need to do the same thing throughout this journey, this career exploration journey. We need to make working fun, right? We need to give them that exposure that they meet an individual that looks like them, that has had a similar background, that is in a career they love. and that they talk about their journey and they talk about the impact they've had on their community by moving into this career.
Thank Chair you. Baker, Thank Representative you. Johnson, if I could speak to that as well. I would just add that I think that's why the individual advising and guidance is so important to this whole process. It's not just exploration. It's also having caring adults and knowledgeable adults who can help you understand what does it actually mean to be in this profession or this career, and to help students understand what is it that's attractive about that influencer job, like what is it that that seems fun about that, and how does that connect to other potential career opportunities that might actually be something they can access in their community. So I agree completely with Heidi that to me that immediately brought back working with young people and them saying they're going to be in the NBA, and it's like, well, maybe, but probably not. And so how do you help those young people understand, you know, not to dim the interest that they have or take away the aspiration, but help them understand what are some ways you can plug into the aspects of that career that you're interested in through gaining real skills, through going through all of your courses in high school and getting things like internships where you can, maybe you can be the social media person at one of the companies that you're, that you might have an internship with. So I think there's ways to plug into those interests with you know, more tangible and more probable career paths for them.
Thank you. All right. I see no other member questions. I want to thank the testifiers for coming in today. Oh, Representative Hussein, go ahead.
Thank you for bringing. This is really beautiful that you put together wonderful presentations. Growing up and being in America, it was a challenge for me to learn English because my mom doesn't speak the language, and I wish this kind of program, so many immigrant and new Americans do not know this kind of program. So how do you reaching out? Because I have a lot of contact and I have a lot of Latinos and overpopulated in my district. Are you reaching out to, how do you advertising and they know this program exists? Because a lot of them are not going to college or after they graduated. If my counselor was not helpful to me and research what I wanted to be in the future, I wouldn't be very successful. I wouldn't be to go to college or like. How are you guys reaching out to for those new Americans and people that are really underserved community that can benefit this wonderful program?
Who wants to take that, Ms. Engels?
Yeah, I can take that. Thank you, Chair Baker and Representative Hussein. I think, well, for our program, and obviously we're operating in a specific, you know, in Minneapolis and St. Paul, I think what's really powerful about the Discover Your Future framework and which aligns with our model is that it's a comprehensive approach. It's not a program. It's a comprehensive approach to how schools would offer these services and work with young people around exploring their careers. So in our case, students don't have to know about Achieve. They don't have to sign up for anything. They don't have to, you know, be part of a cohort or anything like that. This is just part of what's offered through their school day. And our team is working right alongside the counselors, the CTE teachers, the work-based learning teachers, to make sure that all students are aware of the different courses or different experiences they can access. To make sure that they're getting that one-on-one guidance throughout their time in high school, to make sure that these experiences are aligning with that personalized learning plan that every single student is working through as they're going through high school. So I think that that kind of holistic approach is really helpful for making sure that no students are unaware or getting left behind.
Thank you. To add on to that.
Ms. Johnson, yes.
I just want to be clear that this is a framework that we are piloting. This is a framework we are recommending become a statewide standard across all of our schools. This isn't in existence necessarily yet at every high school in Minnesota. The CoLab program I spoke about, I'm happy to connect with you about, because that is a program that your constituents could absolutely apply for and be a part of.
The idea here is to get it embedded into the school system. You're starting with Minneapolis-St. Paul. So anything final, otherwise we need to move along. Thank you, Representative. All right. Thank you, members, very much for that. Thank you for the testimony. Folks, we are going to have our Department of Labor come up now, please, if Ms. Larson could come up. And then we've got two bills after that. So we're going to kind of move things along a little bit here. As I mentioned earlier, I want to be done with our work today at 5 to 10. We're going to give each bill around 20 minutes total, if we could. Discussion, I think some will be a little less than that. But when Ms. Larson and Josiah is all set to go, you guys can dive in. To our friends at Labor, welcome back to the committee this year. It's good to have you back. Please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning. Are you able to hear me? Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Erin Larson, and I'm the Director of the Apprenticeship Division at the Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you for the opportunity this morning to provide an update on the Registered Teacher Apprenticeship Program grant. Registered apprenticeship programs are most commonly found, as you know, in construction, but programs have been expanding to other sectors over the years, manufacturing, hospitality, healthcare, but most recently as pathways to teaching in the state, as a model that pairs apprentices, most commonly paraprofessionals working in their schools, with journey worker teachers in an employment-based training model that includes both on-the-job training and related classroom instruction. Nationally, registered teacher apprenticeship programs were first recognized by the U.S. Department of Labor in 2022, with the first program registered in Tennessee. Currently, over 40 states and territories administer registered teacher apprenticeship programs, with more than 5,000 apprentices participating. Efforts related to teacher apprenticeship began in Minnesota in 2023. At that time, DLI invested federal dollars to bring together school districts, unions, post-secondary partners, and state agencies to finalize a state standard for apprenticeship that met PELSBY's licensure requirements for teachers. Three registered teacher apprenticeship programs were registered in 2024, including BrightWorks Service Cooperative, North Branch Area Schools, and Minneapolis Public Schools. And during the 2024 legislative session, the legislature also directed $1 million for special education apprenticeships, specifically for the four intermediate districts in the state who are participating in the BrightWorks program. It became clear through the development and approval of these first three programs that a significant amount of time and coordination between stakeholders were needed to develop more programs and ensure program quality. Multiple school districts expressed an interest in teacher apprenticeship, but they lacked the resources to successfully register and maintain a program on their own. During the 2025 legislative session, Governor Walz proposed to grow teacher apprenticeship statewide using a Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee model, or a JATC, that has proven to be successful in construction apprenticeship programs for decades. This approach ensures collaboration between school districts and local unions and is both less costly and easier to administer than having each individual school district register their own apprenticeship program. While initially proposed as one state program, we were pleased to work with Representative Mueller and Representative Frazier to design a competitive grant program that would allow multiple entities to compete statewide or individual district teacher apprenticeship programs to be registered. DLI administered the Registered Teacher Apprenticeship Program grant this past fall. The primary intent of the funding was to support the development of statewide teacher apprenticeship programs. Eligible expenses for programs included the cost of program personnel, partnering with post-secondary institutions to design related instruction, securing the startup equipment and software to manage the program, and subawards to districts specifically for tuition and for stipends to journey worker teachers. The RFP for the grant opened in early September and closed at the end of that same month. Applicants could apply for up to $3 million each. DLI received three grant applications during the month, totaling approximately $6.8 million in funding, and grant awards were announced in January. Three awards were made to Minneapolis Public Schools, Teacher Apprenticeship Minnesota JATC, and the Minnesota Teacher JATC, so slight twist on the words. DLI is currently finalizing contracts with each grantee, and grantees will have until the end of 2027 to spend their funding. So with that, I'm going to give just some quick, short highlights of each of those programs. Currently, Teacher Apprenticeship Minnesota, which is an extension of Education Minnesota, has 15 apprentices across two school districts in the metro area. Those programs focus on elementary education. Minneapolis Public Schools currently has 31 apprentices who are earning teaching licenses in special education and elementary education. And then finally, the Minnesota Teacher JATC, which would be formerly the BrightWorks program that was first registered in the state, has 67 apprentices focused on special education across 13 districts. And I'll have you go to the next slide. If you look at the school districts, you can see they span the state. And this also includes the four intermediate districts that both in 2024 and in 2025 were appropriated additional funding. So as a condition of this grantee's contract, they won't be allowed to provide further state dollars in the form of subawards to those particular four districts. DLI is excited about the progress these programs have already made in expanding teacher pathways and ensuring a more diverse teacher workforce, and we look forward to providing this committee an annual legislative report beginning in 2028. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Director Larson. I appreciate your work on this. I know that there's a number of members working hard on this, and I know this has been a real important item for Representative Mueller, and I'm looking forward to hearing more from her today, too. And just again, this is we need this, and this is a really good starting point. One of the photos in here has one of my students in Wilmer, too, and I'm going to make sure I show Abby that when I see her when I get home. So member questions for the Department of Labor and the apprenticeship program? Seeing none, let's keep it moving forward with that, and appreciate your presentation today. Thank you so much. It's good. All right, next up on the item, we have Representative Mueller to share with us House File 3650. If you could move to the testifying table. Again, we're going to try to keep it to about 20 minutes max per bill total, maybe a little bit more for Representative Mueller's because she has four testifiers. If Mr. Fanning wants to move also up to the table, and maybe Sarah Paul, we've got one online testifier as well. So I just want to make sure that we're sort of in place and moving things along here fairly efficiently. So with that, Representative Mueller, you are going to move your 3650 and go ahead and proceed. And I think we have a little amendment.
In MDE, and we were had a request from Dolly to be included in that. So that
okay.
is the A1 amendment.
Very good. Any members have any questions on the A1? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor of adding A1 to 3650, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? 3650, as amended, is now in front of us. Members, go ahead and explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for indulging me in this cold that apparently will never end and will never go away. So this is my new voice. I'm like Phoebe Buffay from Friends. So thank you. Thank you for those of you who got that. All right. I'm really excited, Mr. Chair and members, to have in front of you House File 3650. And one of the reasons why I am is because this is something, as a teacher of almost 20 years, that has been so near and dear to my heart, to be able to look at education, to be able to see how we can get our students outside of the four walls of the classroom and be able to get them real-life, relatable, rigorous experiences that will give them pathways forward and something that's very personal, very relatable, and something that will be for their future. I wanted to start just a little bit about talking about how Colorado has already done this and that they have actually created something called the Reimagining Futures of Postsecondary Talent System in Colorado, and that the Colorado initiative aims to close the gap by rethinking how education and workforce systems interact rather than treating them as separate domains with occasional intersections. This envisions it to integrate talent development systems. And we've heard a lot about that today, and I'm really excited about it. Mr. Chair, you did talk a little bit about soft skills, and those are now are actually more commonly known as durable skills now. And durable skills are something that we are able to really embed as we have workforce experiences. There is a study that was done by America Succeeds, and they talk about how these type of skill building work-based experiences that they are able to really embed durable skills, as they have seen that a great percentage of our workforce actually asks them to have at least four of durable skills that are hard to measure. And so it's been really good to be able to see that. I have a lot of exciting things to be able to talk about. This bill intentionally asks these four agencies to collaborate together and to look at how we can remove barriers to create a statewide framework for student career pathways. This is a completely opt-in program for our schools. It's not an extra mandate, but it does ask these four agencies to work together, remove barriers, show how we can have an integrated system that will really move our students into a pathway system that allows them to have really relatable and rigorous experiences. This is just one piece of the puzzle. Senator Murrah and I have a bill that looked at high school redesign, because honestly, sometimes a barrier is simply high school schedule in itself. And so looking at how we can do that. So this is just one piece of the puzzle, and it's the first stop for this bill. So Mr. Chair, rather than me drone on, I have some really amazing testifiers here that talk about the work that they're already doing and how this bill might be able to expand the work that they would like to do in the future. Thank you,
Great.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative, for that. And again, to the testifiers, if we can try to keep it around that 2-3 minute mark, we'll try to do our best to try to get out on time. Mr. Fanning, we've got you up first, if that's all right. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Or no, it doesn't matter who's up. But if you're there, it doesn't matter. So we're all good. Thank you. But go ahead and introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, and thank you, Representative Mueller. Thank you, co-chairs. Thank you, committee members. I am John Fanning, Director of Education Partnerships Coalition of Minnesota, or EPC, speaking in support of House File 3650. EPC is a bipartisan coalition of 9 cradle-to-career partnerships across Minnesota. Our collective impact model engages more than 600 local partner organizations, supporting more than 300,000 young Minnesotans and their families. EPC communities are in greater Minnesota, as well as in metro and urban parts of our state. Our work is relentlessly bipartisan in communities both predominantly red and blue. To complement the testimony of my terrific peers over there earlier this morning, I want to talk about an important adjacent topic: significant international and national private investment for workforce and education initiatives that does not come to Minnesota. I'm talking about the Gates Foundation, currently investing a whopping $53 million nationwide in the education to workforce space, with California just getting $9 million, far beyond their proportional share, but no investment here. I'm talking about a Walton Family Foundation joint venture just releasing their first round of grants in the education to workforce space, totaling $7.5 million to 5 states, including 3 of our Midwest neighbors, Indiana, Ohio, and Illinois, but no investment here. I am talking about Kentucky just winning a 5th Toyota plant with a $225 million price tag in a rural part of their state. Toyota has active plants in 9 states, none here. The Lieutenant Governor of Kentucky reports that they win these contracts because secondary is connected to career in a way that these plants can come into less populated parts of their state and know that the jobs that they are bringing will be filled by the local and regional population. It is not that great work is not happening in Minnesota. It is, and you heard a lot about it this morning from P20, from ECMC, from Achieve Twin Cities. We also have the Greater Twin Cities United Way with their statewide Career Academies program. They're all doing incredible work in parts of Minnesota, both big and small, urban and rural, in red and blue. And we should be very proud of this work, because this is really heavy lifting to connect high school students with great post-secondary opportunities that lead to high-quality, high-wage careers. And they are doing this heavy lifting without enabling legislation like House Bill 3050 3650 to provide structure, to create opportunities, and to remove barriers. Legislation like this matters when national foundations and international corporations look for states in which to invest, and they are consistently passing us by. Because we all want Minnesota to be the best state in this nation in which to raise children, because we all want our state to be equitable and prosperous for all, we simply cannot leave this private investment on the table. Please support House Bill 3650. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fanning. I appreciate your testimony. If we have questions, we're going to save them to the end members as well. Superintendent Paul, if you would be willing to go on next then. Oh, whatever. That's fine. That sounds good. You go ahead. Just introduce yourself and proceed.
Chair Baker, members of the committee, my name is Tim McMillan, and I serve as the chair of the North Branch School Board, and I'm here today to support in support of House Bill 3560 or 3650. Superintendent Paul and I have been here before, and we've testified with Representative Mueller, and you can probably get the sense that North Branch, if you've seen our name up on the screen this morning, is that we think outside the box and we lean into career readiness. So I'm just going to make one statement and then I'm going to yield my time to Superintendent Paul, who's going to dive into to more of the details. But as a local school board leader, one of our most important responsibilities is ensuring that every student graduates with a clear pathway to success. For some students, that pathway leads directly to a four-year university. For others, it may include technical training, apprenticeships, military service, or immediate entry into the workforce. House File 3650 recognizes that success is not one size fits all, and that our state must support multiple high-quality career pathways. And I think you'll hear Superintendent Paul talk about North Branch and how we're aligned in our community with some of our industry in town. And I think we just have a great opportunity to grow in that space. And we know that this alignment is going to help our kids. And that's why we get into this business. That's why we run for our local school districts. That's why we're board members. So thank you, Superintendent Paul.
Ms. Paul, go ahead.
Chair McMillan, and thank you, Chair and committee members. Again, my name is Sarah Paul. I've been serving as the superintendent of North Branch Area Public Schools for 6 years. And before that, I was serving as assistant superintendent in both Minneapolis Public Schools and then White Bear Lake Area Schools. Focusing on career pathways and looking at this big blur concept, if you've heard research from a few years back, we really need to make sure that we're thinking about what are those opportunities and experiences. I think the presentation earlier and the framework that was shared, that's the work. There, when you've been in this work, those phases are well articulated. I don't need to go into details on that. But each community is different, and there's different local context. In White Bear Lake, we were able to establish multiple career paths, connecting to local employers, making sure that we could take students through those phases, and finding those endpoints for employers to really feel that they could have that value add in a strategic, efficient way. Coming to North Branch, we have the state's largest shovel-ready industrial park in Minnesota, 250 acres. It has sat dormant for over 20 years. So when you're coming into a community and there's a reason why we have this great opportunity for industry and it's not happening. So within the first 2 years, I became part of the North Branch Economic Development Authority, and I'm currently the chair of that committee because it is so important to my work as a superintendent, and it's important for our community as a whole that we figure this out. Just yesterday, I was presenting at DEED. And the Future Forward Fund, we have, right now we're on the cusp of having a $157 million investment from Louisiana Pacific that's coming to North Branch. It's going to take up approximately half of our industrial park. And they're coming because we are creating the win-win opportunities. They're going to bring 100 jobs. And if you look at what DEED represents as pay that is important for livable wage jobs, $23 in rural areas, $28 metro areas. Louisiana Pacific is looking at $32 an hour for manufacturing jobs that integrate different aspects of the manufacturing sector as well as supply chain logistics. These are huge opportunities for us, and it's evidence that there are pockets of alignment happening. And it's a huge opportunity for us in Minnesota. We are not just competing against each other in our different cities. We are competing against other national and international opportunities that incentivize and have clarity of what these connections look like for that employer to be incentivized to come here, and for K-12 to have those opportunities to create those connections that are so important to help students find their purpose in their education, graduating, but not only graduating, but graduating with a plan. In speaking to this opportunity, I fully support this framework, and I want to give one example of where you see the power of alignment happening. You heard earlier Aaron Larson speaking from the Department of Labor and Industry. We talked about that opportunity of registered teacher apprenticeships. Registered teacher apprenticeships is a model that has to be implemented with fidelity if you are going to get the outcomes that you're seeking. We needed that coordination to happen. With your support, we were able to, instead of working in separate silos, because local context matters, we need to protect the school board and local control on making informed decisions about what kind of jobs that we need in terms of our education priorities. Yet we created the conditions for us to partner together because we cannot do it by ourselves. So the Department of Labor and Industry is leading this work. They have clarity of that lead role in this work. Then you have the Minnesota Department of Education coming alongside in a support role. They're at the table. You have Pelsby that is working in coordination with school districts and higher education around what are the high need areas that we need to be strategic about making sure that these registered teacher apprenticeships are offering. And then I'm serving as the co-chair of the Minnesota Teachers Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee. Go, 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 because we're partnering. There's 13 of us districts and half labor, half district leadership. We're doing the hard work of coming together and making sure that we have coordinated uniqueness and that we're bringing efficiency to a model that's being implemented with fidelity. Alignment, alignment, alignment. We need it. And I love the testimony earlier that when you see this happening through a framework, you're going to see Minnesota popping up as a leading candidate to attract these high-wage jobs that are going to help more people have the opportunity that I have in North Branch right now. I get to live and work in my community. I get to be connected with a lot of the things that make a community real. Over half of our residents commute over 30 minutes to get to their work. And we can do better, and it's going to come through alignment. It's going to come through working together. You heard presentations. We have all the pieces here. We just got to bring them together. So thank you for your time.
Oh, Superintendent Paul, I just want to say thank you for also stepping outside of sometimes your traditional role of getting super engaged in the community on economic development. That is my aha moment today. So thank you for doing that and your incredible engagement. Again, we want to keep this thing moving along a little bit. If we could have Mr. Hendrickson come forward, the teacher from Shakopee. And then we're going to also have Matt Schmidt online here right after that. And again, we want to keep this to about 2 minutes if we could, testifiers. And then we'll have to have a quick wrap up as well from Representative Mueller as well when we're done. So we're moving along. So welcome to the committee. Mr. Hendrickson, please proceed with your testimony.
Just for you.
He's setting his timer for you.
All right. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay, good morning. Chairs Baker and Pinto, members of the Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development Finance Committee. TJ Hendrickson, I've had the privilege of teaching at Shakopee Schools for the last 34 years. I teach engineering, manufacturing, fabrication, apprenticeships, work-based learning. Basically, if it's related to career orientation, I teach it. I'm honored to represent the school district and the community that I get to serve. We designed in Shakopee, the academies of Shakopee, to ensure that every student graduates with a plan and the skills that they need to survive in an evolving workforce. By connecting academic learning with real-world applications, students gain relevant, hands-on experiences that build technical knowledge along with essential workplace skills such as communication, collaboration, and problem-solving. Shakopee High School offers 6 different career-focused academies that support career exploration and skill development. Through these pathways, students participate in hands-on, career-connected learning experiences that help them explore interests, refine goals, and make informed decisions about their futures. The example I have is I had a group of students in sixth grade, came in, sat down, they were really frustrated one day. They had a friend who was deaf. They were getting frustrated because he would leave his notebook behind. How does he leave a note so they couldn't communicate? So they problem solved and decided with a gardening glove, flexible sensors, an Arduino board, and a speaker, programmed it so that when he signed, it would actually talk to them. So projects like that allow students to apply engineering and problem-solving skills to real-world challenges that matter for their daily lives. It's more than a sequence of courses. They are a system of career-connected learning rooted in career and technical education and problem-solving. Students work on authentic projects, collaborate with industry professionals and mentors, and develop the skills needed for post-secondary education, technical training, apprenticeships, and high-demand careers. This would not be allowed without strong community partnerships. We're grateful for the continued support of the Shakopee Chamber of Commerce, our industry partners who provide mentorships, site visits, internships, and all sorts of real-life project opportunities. One of our industry partners reached out to us and said, just letting you know, NASA's going to be calling you. What for? They want you to prototype for them. So we developed a program that actually has gotten international acclaim, where we are developing things to go to the International Space Station. These partnerships help the students understand career opportunities and the pathways needed to reach their goals, with also strengthening the connection between education and the workforce needs here in Minnesota. We can demonstrate that when it is possible, schools, businesses, and communities working together can support our students. Continued support for the career pathways, technical education, and problem-based learning ensures that students across Minnesota are prepared for both college and career success. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Hendrickson, thank you so much for your testimony as well and for doing what you do in Shakopee. So thank you very, very much. Members online now, we have a principal from Austin High School, Mr. Matt Schmidt. If you want to unmute yourself, please, you'll come on our screen and you can go ahead with your two-minute testimony, Mr. Schmidt. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Baker and members of the committee. I want to thank you for the opportunity here today. My name is Matt Schmidt, principal of the high school in Austin, Minnesota. And I want to begin by having you think back to your ninth grade year in high school. You had the new shoes, the new backpack, perhaps the newest Trapper Keeper. And all you were worried about was getting your locker open and finding a seat during lunch. And then a teacher asked you, what do you want to do after high school? Did you have any idea what you wanted to do, and any idea of all of the careers that were possible at that time? I know that I didn't. I didn't understand all of the possibilities that were there. And to ask a 14-year-old to know that and to magically figure it out on their own is just not possible. And what's happening is our students are going to college and using that as the most expensive career exploration course they could possibly have. And sometimes it's just not the right fit for them. They might not need the four-year college. And so what we are doing is we're focusing on, one, the transition between eighth and ninth grade as one of the most critical times for students. We know that if a student's off track for graduation after ninth grade, they're about four times less likely to graduate on time. And what we've built is a required year-long freshman seminar course. And in that freshman seminar course, they are developing soft skills, career exploration, they take interest surveys, they take the Clifton Strengths Finders, they hear from local business leaders, and they ask questions like, what kind of lifestyle do I want? Where do I want to live? What am I good at? And what do I enjoy? And then we help them build a four-year plan during their freshman year that maps out their post-secondary education also. It's not about picking classes based on which friends you have or which classes are easy, but it's about purpose. And when a student walks into that algebra class or the biology class, they can ask the question, why am I taking this? And that clarity changes engagement. It changes motivation. And we don't stop there with ninth grade. Under the umbrella of the Packer profile, we focus on three levels, career exploration, career or meaningful learning, and a portfolio. Students participate in mentorship, internships, job shadowing with local businesses. They attend career fairs, college fairs, and they build a four-year portfolio documents growth skills, and experiences. We partner directly with the community. Local businesses help us design hands-on opportunities so students graduate with real world experience, not just credits. And I'll give you an example of that, our AF&R program, which is now the fastest growing department in Austin Public Schools. When it comes to hands-on out-of-school learning opportunities, they're leading the way. When they talk about farming, they go to John Deere and watch those tractors being built. When they're talking about ethanol, they go to an ethanol plant and they get their hands into it. And students before that didn't think of AF&R as a possible pathway are now going into it with eyes wide open. And over the past 3 years, after implementing our ninth grade seminar class, our credit attainment rate, that means students passing classes, have gone from 85% to 94% and continues to rise. That means more students are on track, more students are graduating on time, and more students are prepared for what comes next. And the reality is, it requires a lot of structure, a lot of coordination, requires staff time, business partnerships, and systems to monitor progress. And if no one is responsible for monitoring it, it doesn't get done. And so we've made that investment locally. We believe that it matters. We believe in the direction, and we have data to show that it works. Career exploration isn't just about steering students into a path. It's about exposing them to all the possibilities. It's about ensuring that when they leave high school, whether they choose a four-year university, a two-year program, a trade or military, or direct employment, they do so with clarity and purpose. And students understand the why. Achievement follows.
Mr. Schmidt, I've got to have you wrap up, okay? Mr. Schmidt, thank you.
Thank you for the time. I'm open to any questions at the end.
Thank you very, very much for your testimony. Appreciate that very much. That concludes our testimony. Again, to member questions, if there are any, we are short on time. And the plan, Mr. Chair, is also to move it on to education finance. So the chairs there would like to kind of just see this bill as well. So the hope is that we can pass it out of committee to our education finance. So any member questions? Chair Pinto.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I actually have several. One thing just to note first is so grateful to the testifiers and to the bill author, because your passion for helping young people be on a good path is just comes through so clearly. And we all know that when that happens, then the rest of us benefit as well. So grateful to you. I do have some questions about this particular proposal, and maybe just one process question. So a fiscal note has been requested, Mr. Chair?
I believe, yes, it has.
There's been a fiscal note. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
There's been a fiscal note requested. Has not been completed yet. I did want to say, though, that at this time, there's been conversations going on. There's partnerships with P20, with a conversation happening there. And ECMC has also talked about possibly looking at some grant dollars that they'd be able to use instead of using any general dollars at all.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Mueller. Yeah, because I certainly would expect the bill would come back for us to be able to assess from a financial perspective, and I want to keep things moving. I guess one thing I'm unclear a little bit, though, about is, given that we have P20, given other work, I'm just unclear about what this would add. I mean, it's definitely a major need to help young people have these connections. The bill, as I read it, ultimately is directing commissioners to sort of work together on this issue. I think, and maybe I'll ask this, have you worked with, because this is so dependent on these now four commissioners and four agencies, have you worked with the agencies at all in developing this, and how would this be different than what is already in existence?
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Baker. And I did not admittedly sit and talk with each and every commissioner with this.
Oh, yeah.
I will say that none of them came to testify against it, and so that's a kudos. But the thing that I will say is that we heard from multiple testifiers today that what is needed to move us out of siloed experiences is to have that systems approach. And the only way to do that is to actually ask each of the parts to talk together and to remove the barriers. As we've said, it doesn't have to be as complicated as creating anything that is this massive thing. It could be as simple as what Representative Hussein is talking about in creating a central data space. Maybe it's as simple as looking at, or as complicated as looking at high school schedules. It's what are the barriers and how can we remove those barriers to actually make it so that Shakopee isn't a one-off, that North Branch isn't a one-off, that we have the accessible accessibility for each of our schools. Almost every single state that has been highlighted has had this step happen, where they actually are forcing these, asking these agencies to work together to remove the barriers to make it to be a statewide framework.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That makes some sense. I guess I would certainly encourage, we'll certainly encourage the agencies to reach out to you, as you say, and certainly encourage you as well, since so much of it is, seems to be dependent on sort of them all working together. Back to the finances for a second, there's the references on page 3 to commissioners using existing resources for at least one of the pieces. That always concerns me a bit, given that, you know, we sort of give them a budget to do a certain thing, and if we ask them to do more stuff with the same amount of money, then that means they're not doing something else in theory. So a bit of concern there. I guess as long as it makes sense to me, this bill would continue to move forward, have other committees be looking at it. It would be important to me that it come back to us from the financial perspective. It may well be that we have outside grants covering all of it. And then if they're just going to fund these commissioners working together in these ways, that generally seems, you know, seems great to me. But I guess so I'm not inclined to sort of get in the way of it at this point, but I would want to make sure that we do have a sort of final chance to review before we be moving forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair. Representative Mueller, sounds reasonable to me. If we get it moving in today, we can make sure we check on it as it goes further. So any further member questions? Seeing none, final comments on the bill quickly.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chair and members. I'm excited to be able to continue to work on this, and I'm excited to see the collaboration happening. I just want you to understand that this is more than CTE. This is more than just being able to see, you know, more siloed work. We want to be able to see a seamless way for each of us to be able to have our kiddos have as much time as possible in rigorous and relatable experiences. And I've talked to several of my DFL colleagues, and if you are at all interested in this, I'm still looking for a DFL author. And I know Representative Hussein is super excited about it, and so would love to join. Also, I've talked to Representative Frazier. So thank you so much. And at that point, Mr. Chair, I would again renew my motion to refer this to Education Finance.
As amended.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you very much. Member, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? House File 3650 as amended is on its way to Education Finance, and thank you very much for your time today. Representative Bakeberg is up next, and if the Department of Labor person could come up as well and join if there's some conversation as well there, that would be great. Again, we've got about 6 minutes at the top of the hour, so we're going to try to keep it moving very quickly. Thank you for your patience, Representative Bakeberg. To your bill, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And thank you for the opportunity to provide an update on House File 2238. Just a reminder, the goal of this bill is to allow youth skills school districts to partner with construction companies to have 16 and 17-year-olds work in their corporate office. Corporate office is the key word. We had extensive conversations about this bill last year, and we agreed, Representative Tabke and I agreed, that we would work on this in the interim, and happy to report that happened. And really, honestly, these two deserve the credit. So just out of the sake of time, I would turn it over to the Department of Labor and Shakopee Schools to talk about how they came to an agreement without us, honestly, having to pass a law to be able to make this happen. So I will turn it over to testifiers.
Better yet, that's great. Who would like to start? Yes, go ahead. Please introduce yourself and continue.
Good morning, chairs, members of the committee. My name is Annie Welch. I am the Director of Projects and Planning with the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry, which includes the Youth Skills Training Program.
A little bit louder, please, if you could.
Oh,
thank
apologies.
You. Yep,
I'm
go ahead.
Real close. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, we had a great opportunity to work together with Representative Bakeberg and TJ Shakopee, several other colleagues, and essentially in realizing that information technology is cross-disciplinary, cross-industry. We really realized that the goal of the bill could be achieved administratively, so we added project management as a pathway in information technology, which is an existing industry with youth skills training. So we are really grateful to have achieved the goal without the need for any legislation. So thank you.
That makes us happy. Thank you so much, Ms. Ms. Welch, for that. And it's great that you guys are working on this. Welcome back, Mr. TJ. Go ahead and with your testimony.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. So thank you again for round two. Just real briefly, youth skills training gives students the opportunity to safely explore careers while still in high school through structured, supervised, real-world experiences. It's built on different foundations of career and technical education, work-based learning, but it most importantly helps them develop those technical skills. You referred to them as soft skills. I call them professional skills. And as a gives them a clear expectation of what is needed to be in the workplace. When I talk to my advisory board, the number one thing is determination, grit. I believe the kids call it ghosting, so making sure that they can't just not show up. So we're trying to change a mindset, a mind growth. One of the greatest benefits that we have seen out of this is the students' understanding of safety. In our program, one of the requirements of the program in YST is the students must complete an industry certification. We choose to do OSHA 10. My students, over 9 weeks, gather 44 industry certifications. So those industry certifications tie into multiple different businesses, multiple different industry partners. And then those, because they're so strongly based in safety and the parameters that are set up through the Department of Labor, that the students are able to demonstrate repeatedly that they're safe in the workplace, which, shall we say, alleviates a lot of tension. So I can give you examples on that. The biggest plus side that people don't see unless they're literally with the students is the amount of engagement. Students are showing up. I just talked to a new industry partner yesterday. We signed him on Monday, and their first words are, do all your kids do resumes like this? Are they always standing like this? Do they always dress for success? It's that kind of thing. I hate to say it's old school, but it's that kind of mentality of walking in, standing up front, standing on their two feet and saying, I want to be here. So while they're doing that, they're also being gained the ability to be paid. That changes a student's mindset rather quickly. So we've had students get jobs that have started at $18 an hour, running up to $25 an hour. We have one program that is incentivized, meaning the longer the student stays with the company, they can be promoted within the company and get paid more. Shocking to students. To us, this is the way the world works. So I can give you other examples of that, but our biggest partnerships with industry leaders for us, Danny's Construction, Greystone Construction, Highmark Builders, they're getting the opportunity to design and build what they perceive the future through project management. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Hendrickson, thank you so much. It's exciting seeing teachers like you get out there and really set these things up. And I also just want to say thank you to the Department of Labor for really working collaboratively with Representative Bakeberg on this. I know he has been very much a champion of this. And again, we are planning to just hold this bill over, members, for a bill we can admire at the end, but I think it's kind of in place right now. So closing comments, Representative Bakeberg, and great work on this.
Yeah, I would echo thank you to Commissioner Blissenbach, to the Department of Labor, to Ms. Welch, and Representative Tabke as well for the partnership in this work. I think it's important that we do that. The Shakopee Chamber and Mr. Hendrickson named the industry partners that are so important, and really this whole hearing today was about industry partners and the importance of that. And really what we did was find a solution that is going to work for all kids across Minnesota to help kids be engaged in their own education. But I'd like to thank these two specifically. They really rolled up their sleeves and really had the mindset of how do we work together to get to a yes, and how do we figure out and solve problems for our community. And honestly, that's a model that we could all follow, not only here at the legislature, but just across the board. And I think in closing, Mr. Hendrickson is the example of the amazing teachers that we have across our state serving our kids. The passion and the drive just comes out. And I would encourage you, if you have the opportunity, to visit Shakopee and see the amazing work they're doing at the academies. Assistant Superintendent is over in the crowd as well, so kudos to him and his team as well. Thank you.
Congratulations, everybody. Thank you so much again. We will hold this bill over, and again, likely not need to do it at this point. Chair Pinto, would you like to give us a preview again about Tuesday's hearing?
Mr. Chair, I wish I could, but I'm still figuring it out.
Still working on it.
But I very much appreciate you offering and providing the opportunity, Mr. Chair.
I always want to do that, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Members, we are finished with our work today. That'll adjourn our meeting today. Thank you very much. We are adjourned.